Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello and welcome to the Colts Cover 2 podcast. I'm Joel A. Erickson. I'm joined, as always, by Nate Atkins. We took a week off because of technical difficulties, essentially. But it's also been fairly quiet on the Colts roster front, Colts coaching front. There's plenty of coaching news and stuff going on around the league right now. There just isn't in the Colts building. When they decided to bring back Gus Bradley, it kind of put everything on the back burner. I mean, the biggest thing sitting out there is whether or not Ed Dodds gets the Chargers job, essentially.
Yeah, and you know, it's one of those things where there's still coaching movement to be done with other teams, and so that could always play into potentially assistants on the Colts looking at other opportunities. But when they have all three coordinators coming back, head coach coming back, and it's weird. It's so different than the last two off seasons, where last year obviously they were looking for coach and quarterback. The year before, they were looking for a quarterback and defensive coordinator. And not only that, but that was when we knew there were going to be two different quarterback trades, one to move off Carson Wentz, then one to acquire whoever was going to replace him. And like, there just aren't things hanging out there yet that are different than, you know, there's like set dates to this now where like we just have to wait till they get into, you know, to free agency and the franchise tag period, and obviously closer to the draft. It's like, until those dates come up, and that's the hope. You hope that there's not other news that comes out that you know, that this team has had with its players in the past year. But yeah, for the most part, it's a quiet time for the roster, for the coaching staff, and it's weird. It makes it harder to talk about. It makes it easier to deal with, though, than the uncertainty and the kind of hectic times that, like, just a year ago at this time, I think we were tracking like 14 different coaching candidates and three rounds of interviews. So things have changed a lot in just a year, and that's just kind of the nature of the NFL.
Yeah, there is one piece of information out there that I know people are paying attention to and talking about regarding Jim Irsay's health. As we're taping this, we are not going to get into Irsay's health and what's going on, the rumors. What we have is on the website, essentially. What we know is on the website in terms of him being found unresponsive on December 8th, the hospitalization, all that other stuff. We can't really get into anything else because it would be speculation, and it's not really – there's just no reason to speculate on something like that. You just have to wait for news from the Colts, from Irsay, from somebody going forward. So we're not going to get into that. We're going to try to keep this podcast football focused. I think kind of the way we started this, in terms of saying that, you know, this is a different offseason for the Colts. We're talking about it from like the normal football turnover stuff, not what's going on with Jim Irsay's health. We're going to, like I said, we're going to stay away from that. In terms of this podcast, and essentially in an effort to avoid speculation. I don't want to speculate on something we don't know 100%. So moving on back to the Colts from a football standpoint, if you're looking at this offseason and laying out what this offseason might look like, the first real big date for this team, and this is like you were just saying, very, very different from the last however many off seasons, because there's no quarterback pursuit to worry about. The first date is in February, I believe, and it actually lasts longer than that. I think it's February 20th is when teams can place the franchise tag on players. They typically do not do that right away. It typically goes closer to the deadline with that. The deadline is March 5th. That's the day after the combine. that has not been an issue for the Colts in the past, I think it could be this year.
Yeah, it's a interesting conversation. It's weird to think, like, coming into the season last year, we thought the conversation was going to be all about Jonathan Taylor, and he did too. And that led to a very odd couple of months of covering, you know, this team with what it went through with the star player. And then they got him under contract, and what it did was it, you know, it shifted the focus there to another star that they have as a free agent, which is Michael Pittman Jr. Just finished his fourth year, and it was his best year yet. Had more than 1,100 yards in, you know, another year where he had a, you know, a quarterback change coming into the year, and then again kind of a third the way through the season, and yet, you know, he was able to kind of be his best self, and that matters for the Colts' interest in him, and all, but it really matters for his market, you know, at his position. It's interesting with, like, this franchise tag, because Jonathan Taylor clearly did not want to play on it. No running back really seems like they do, just because of how that position wears down and how low that franchise tag is. Different calculus at wide receiver, where Michael Pittman Jr. was asked last time we talked to him about the franchise tag, and he said he wouldn't, you know, he wouldn't necessarily not want to play on it because it is a sign of respect, and it's, you know, it's more than $20 million. I don't sense that it's not his preferred route. You know, he wants that long-term deal and that certainty. And so it'll be interesting to see how the Colts approach it, because, you know, Chris Ballard's called it a tool, said we could use it, don't want to use it. Has he ever used it?
No.
Okay.
No.
That's what I thought. So he's never gone there. And like the last time he dabbled in the idea of it, things got so hectic with Jonathan Taylor, and he said he's not afraid of the backlash with it. But I just have to think that the way that went down, like, if they're learning lessons from their mistakes, they've just got to handle it a little bit better. At least not, doesn't mean you can't use a franchise tag, but you got to kind of know what you're dipping into. And if you do, so with Michael Pittman Jr., I think what, you know, would make sense, you know, like he laid this out too, and he knows super well, because his dad played running back for about a decade in the league, so he grew up in this stuff. But franchise tag, ideally, like, it was originally created as an extension window to get a long-term deal done, and if that's how the Colts want to use it, I think that's something that can work for both sides. What it has often become, and what running backs hated it about it, is the idea that it's sort of like a rental agreement for an extra year. And so the Colts have to decide if they want to use the tag, and then which of those routes they want to take. Are they just trying to secure him here to work out the deal that they want to get with him, but not, you know, deal with that open market and free agency? Or do they want to string it out using that window? And I think they could have a couple fairly different results based on how they handle that.
Yeah, I think, especially after Pittman said, you know, that he knows it's a tool that can be used to work toward a long-term deal, I think that the most likely thing is that's how the Colts use it, is rather than letting him get to the open market and let somebody else bid up the price. I mean, no, I'm not saying you can get him cheap. That's not going to happen. But in terms of, like, a true bidding war on the open market, I think that might be just to make sure that they still have him for next year. Given that they need, given that they have a young quarterback who needs his number one receiver, who needs the reliable target like that, I think that you do that just to keep him from getting to the open market. And the whole goal the entire time is to hammer out a long term deal, whatever that looks like. Now, what does that number look like? I don't know. It's big. It's very big. I think there's eight receivers right now making more than $23 million a year in average annual value. It's like 13 or something like that. They're making over 20. Both of those numbers are about to go up. Jamar Chase, there's other players around the league who are going to sign deals this year. So I don't know exactly what the number is, but it just doesn't make sense. And I know, like, if you're looking at mock drafts and stuff, there's a lot of people, like, talking about, like, well, when Michael Pittman's gone, I just don't understand why the Colts wouldn't bring him back. Given like his position in the offense, what else they have at wide receiver, and the need to have experienced and consistent targets for Richardson.
Yeah, it really does. Especially the main thing is that there's nothing holding them back from doing the deal. They are not. So contrast it with like another receiver who is in this spot is T. Higgins. And the Bengals just signed Joe Burrow to this massive deal. They have Ja'Marr Chase coming up for an extension at the same position. And we know that's a franchise that doesn't throw money around the same way as some others. So it makes sense of why they're, you know, they have to make a decision on T. Higgins just in terms of not do we like him, but does this fit? It just about anything can fit with the Colts right now. This is a nice spot that they're finally in when they've moved past the dead money on Matt Ryan and Carson Wentz, and they've moved on to a quarterback on a rookie deal, and they just don't have premium positions that they've paid in very significant ways. Their big contracts are still to guys, and they're big, don't get me wrong, but they're guys at positions that don't wreck the cap. You know, DeForest Buckner, Quentin Nelson. If you look at what this team has spent at outside cornerback, offensive tackle, wide receiver, you could throw a tight end in there, quarterback, pass rush, edge rusher. I mean, they're kind of due for this. This is kind of what has held them back in recent years is they've needed more of those kind of dudes. They've got one who, you know, we could debate is Michael Pittman, you know, is he a top of the league wide receiver? No, he's a guy, though, that has led them in receiving yards three straight years who the defense knows is getting the ball and he gets it anyway. Like, he fits the definition of if there are 32 number one wide receivers, he is definitely in that group. I think you could argue he's in the top half of that group. He's going to get paid like he's in the top half of the group. And the thing is, they have so much money because they've got more than $60 million available right now, and that number is just going to kind of go up and up as they go further into the next few years of Anthony Richardson's rookie deal, which is when Pittman's contract would be. And so the thing is, Pittman knows this too. And so that's where, like, the messaging of how they want to use the tag is going to be key, because they're not in a – the great thing is they have the money to do what they want to do. He knows that too. So it's not going to – like, there's just not excuses to let him walk unless you just don't want him here anymore. And I don't – I know you've made this case, so I'll let you make it here. But he really seems to fit. Not only do they need him on the field, does he fit their offense, but he seems to fit the kind of player that Chris Ballard likes to sign to.
Yeah, I kind of think of him as Chris Ballard's, like, pretty close to ideal wide receiver. All the stuff that Chris Ballard talks about in terms of like doing the dirty work and the toughness and playing through injury. He's very rarely hurt. When he is, he tries to play through it. He just does the job. And that to me, like, it makes him a Ballard, like a clear Ballard player. And Chris has said some of this stuff, but just kind of looking at Pittman, I also think that, like, Pittman can be very honest sometimes. And I think Ballard appreciates that. Mm-hmm. Over the course of the time covering the general manager, I think Ballard believes that in a player, like, that it's a good thing in a player, not a bad thing. So if it'd be different if he was like squawking all the time about catches and stuff like that, but if it happens once when they lose and he's frustrated, Ballard understands being frustrated and emotional during games. You know, I just think the way Pittman plays is very, very much what Ballard would like at a position that I frankly don't think Ballard has maybe valued properly in terms of the past. But this is a terms of a player who's very productive and also does a lot of the stuff that I think Ballard cares about the position.
It kind of feels like Ballard's been waiting to find a receiver that he could fall in love with. And Pittman seems like a guy that can be like that in terms of he checks a lot of the boxes, performance on the field. Can he do the things of a number one wide receiver? Can you build your offense around that? You add in all that sort of, you know, the dirty work, the blocking, some of the just competitive energy on the field. And then I do think that hatred of losing and that way that he kind of raises the boats around him by, you know, Ballard talks all the time that when you pay players, especially when you pay them high, you're telling everybody that, like, this is what we want you to be. Now, that it's kind of a sliding scale because it's not like every player can now go out there and talk about their targets after every game. You have to be good enough to kind of demand this. But this is the kind of thing, he said before, going into the season, he said, like, I don't mind at all guys who get frustrated with their role, want to do more, as long as they can do more, and it's in the interest of winning. And that's ultimately how I wanted, you know, how I thought people should ultimately understand, you know, what Pittman went through kind of early in the season when we had the conversation about his targets, is that, you know, you could say you don't, you know, maybe it wasn't the thing to say at the time, but it really was rooted in the fact that they just lost a heartbreaking game and he had two catches and he thought he wanted more on his back in order to lead the team to a win. And what happened that week, that was after the Browns game when we had that he and I had that conversation. That week, he sat down with Shane Steichen, and they talked through that, and he said, I do think I should, you know, be a more consistent target in this offense. It wasn't that he wasn't getting targets. It was more the consistency. Was he in the game plan that specific week? You know, he didn't want it to be kind of like, we'll use you a lot some weeks and not others, because he thought he could do more for the team and for Richardson at that time. Actually, I think that was just after Richardson. They just moved to Gardner.
But yeah, Cleveland was post Richardson injury.
Right after that. The idea is that he wanted to kind of be an engine for that offense. So what they did is they went out the next week, and he got the first six targets in that game. And from then on out, he had a stretch of – he caught eight passes in every game from then on out until that hit against the Steelers that knocked him out for like a game and a half. But this is what Ballard really is looking for. He wants those guys that are willing to step up and say, put it on me, and then actually – deliver on that promise. And that's what Pittman showed this year. And so I do think he's the exact kind of player Ballard wants here. The challenge, of course, is that, like, Pittman is very, very knowledgeable about the free agent market. He's had high goals about, you know, he's got a growing family. He's got two young kids born in the past couple of years. He's got a lot of interests outside of football. And he's the son of an NFL running back. And so he kind of grew up in this where, like, you get what you can get. And this is, and wide receivers can do that. They have all the leverage outside of quarterback. They have just about as much leverage as anybody. So the ideal Ballard wide receiver truly is someone who would want to take a lot less money. But in terms of getting everything he wants realistically, Pittman's that kind of guy. And I think they just, whatever that number is, I don't know exactly what it is, over $20 million. But I have to imagine that there's a contract that fits well within what the Colts have available right now that's going to make both sides happy.
I think it starts at 23.
Yeah.
In terms of the biggest argument against, and just to kind of real quick before I go to the next thing, just to kind of back up what you just said about Ballard. Ballard did say in his postseason press conference, the market is what the market is in terms of the wide receiver position.
Yeah, he compared it to, he said,
if you're going to pay a quarterback, you're going to have to pay him $50 million, which is
that,
true.
And he also said you can not like the gas prices, but if it's $4 a gallon, you can either drive or walk.
Right.
I think so, he's realizing, like, is he going to love the number that comes through? No, but he's going to love having that player on his team versus having to figure out life without him. The only thing I would say on this, though, is that, again, the one thing they have to decide if they – I do think the franchise tag could be a smart route, but they need to – and the good thing for them is they communicate. Ballard talks to Pittman all the time. And so they have – and they're very kind of straightforward people and honest, and that helps this kind of a thing. I think they need to have a sort of understanding of what this tag is for, is that, you know, he can tag him, and now it gives us a little bit more time to iron it out, and they have to come through with an offer that's – you know, not insulting, that doesn't feel like you're just keeping him from free agency and he doesn't want to sign your deal. Obviously, it has to make sense for both sides. But I think what I think they should avoid is that sort of one-year rental. I don't think that makes sense for this team, just to have him build for a year with Anthony Richardson, and then either the tag goes up to a really high number next year or he just hits free agency and leaves anyway. I don't think it makes sense for them. And I think you could get into a little bit of a dangerous place with Pittman. He really wants to be here, and he really wants to sign that big long-term deal, and he would love it for it to be in Indianapolis. But he did say that, you know, he thinks that players should model how they do their contract negotiations off of Jonathan Taylor when they need to. And I just have a feeling that I don't think coming off that Taylor situation, they should go down that road of that whole threat of the franchise tag just being that one-year rental agreement without any idea or inkling of a long-term deal. They've got to avoid some of the that vagueness and that weirdness with Jonathan Taylor. I think they will. I don't think that's the road to go down.
Well, the position change is a big deal here. Just like it's like when quarterbacks get franchise tagged, which happens every once in a while. Like when a quarterback gets franchise tagged, they're doing it to work towards a long-term deal. They're just trying to keep him from the market. And if the Colts think that they can do like a 1 year franchise tag and then just move on, that's just not like, I don't know, that would be such a misread of like the way the wide receiver market goes. I would just be shocked if that's what they're actually thinking.
Yeah. The argument for it, and I agree, I don't think they should do it. I don't think they will. I guess the argument for why they might would just be if the number he wants is really, really high, so they tag him. And they realize like they don't really want to stomach that number. And
if
then,
if it's like Tyreek Hill levels you're talking about,
or close to that, Tyreek Hill he's at the top of the market with $30 million. You know, and there's some people could argue that it would be that 1 year extension would be a way to kind of find the next solution. Like the issue they're in right now is that Pittman can just sit down and say, what else are you going to do if you don't sign me? I mean, he's been their entire receiving corps production-wise basically for 3 years now, and they don't have another guy as an outside wide receiver that looks the part of step in and do a very versatile role. So could they spend their first-round pick, get that guy, and grow him into that? I could see how people could entertain that idea. I just don't think it plays out nearly as nicely when he can kind of see what you're doing. If you tag him, you draft a receiver in the first round, you don't come through with a serious offer, this is where you would get into that kind of potentially nasty place with a player. And you don't want to, like, what's going to be very key is getting into the spring and into the training camp and building this offense with Anthony Richardson back out there, getting him those reps with these players in Shane Steichen's offense. You want these pieces to be like happy and working together. And I think once they have that deal, they will be. Or if they have the tag and it's sort of like working toward that, they will be. And that's just, I think, the communication they have to stress in this.
I think the chief objection from people who don't like Pittman is that he doesn't make enough big plays. This is just, and we can talk about this in terms of the entire offseason. My takeaway from Chris Ballard's press conference was that they believe that offensively, if Anthony Richardson's playing, it will fix a lot of the explosive play issues. I could be misreading that. I really think that's what they think. That was sort of his answer on Alec Pierce. He said when they had Richardson, they were 10th in explosive plays. He said it about the running game. Maybe I'm misreading that. I think Chris Ballard believes that if Anthony Richardson is the quarterback, that you're going to get more explosive plays for everybody, not just for, you know, deep threats and players like that.
Yeah, for sure. And with Pittman, I mean, it's just been hard to, like, people, I understand people who say there's not enough big plays because the proof of that has not materialized as much. But, you know, his first 2 years, he was at 12.6 yards a catch. That was rookie year with Phillip Rivers and kind of limited sample. Then he was at 12.3 yards a catch with Carson Wentz, and that was the year where they did rip off some, you know, big down the field moments, scramble drills, and he could be that guy. So he's a different type of player. He's not going to be the guy that just immediately flies down the field past everybody and you throw it to him and no one's around him and he catches it and they just can't keep up with him. That's the hope that Alec Pierce is at times. But it's a high bar, obviously. He is more of your, like, you know, he's a great contested catch player who can kind of create explosive plays when they're a little out of sequence, when they're out of structure, when they're sort of like late in the down. You can throw it up to him. Stephon Gilmore used to say he's open when he's not open because his catch radius is and his ability to go up and high point the ball, and especially if you build that chemistry with the quarterback where he kind of knows the ball placement of it. It's 50-50 balls are more like 65-35 in those situations. The Colts have very rarely had a quarterback for him to play with who plays that style of out of structure, extend the play, and launch down the field really at all. It's been Carson Wentz for 1 year. It's been Anthony Richardson for parts of five games. And, you know, so I think they haven't had the pieces around him to do it as much. Now, That may not be the best part of his game. That's where I think the fit with Alec Pierce, and if they can get Jelani Woods back on the field, Josh Downs has a little bit more of that runaway. Like, the other pieces around him can kind of make up in that area. So, yeah, he's not a perfect wide receiver, but I think he's going to have a lot of big plays. I actually think the bigger qualm with Pittman, I guess just statistically, would be he doesn't score a lot of touchdowns. So he has 15 touchdowns in 4 seasons. His high was 6, and then he's had 4 and 4 the past couple years. That's been something that's kind of eaten at him. He thinks he should have more touchdowns. It's a weird thing. It's sort of like Julio Jones went a lot of years where he just had a lot of yards and not a lot of touchdowns despite being that big-bodied wide receiver. But with Pittman, I mean, some of it's that he's in the red zone and he's getting double-teamed right there and they don't have the same spacing. But some of it's statistical anomaly, too. There's been so many weird moments where he gets tackled at the 1 yard line. And so it's like he set up the touchdown for somebody. But I know that has been a sticking point for some people. It's true. If you look at his production, he's not as maybe top, you know, up there with some of the guys who may get paid around. But I think context really matters as far as the quarterbacks he's had to work with, not only their skill sets, but the fact that you're always building with a new one. I mean, he's had 7 starting quarterbacks, and the most that any one of those has played was 17 games for Carson Wentz and 16 for Phillip Rivers. So, yeah, you get him some consistency. You get a quarterback who – that's where I think he and Richardson could actually fit really well, because that's sort of like that extra read, that extra lever to pull. And once they build that chemistry, I think it could be pretty fun.
So here are the receivers in terms of average annual value. Tyreek Hill is number 1. Davante Adams is 2. Cooper Kupp is 3. A.J. Brown is 4. Stephon Diggs and D.K. Metcalf. Deebo Samuel. Terry McLaurin. McLaurin is at 22.8, basically, in terms of average annual value. Then it drops to D.J. Moore at 20.6. Keenan Allen. Amari Cooper. Mike Williams, Chris Godwin. All those guys are making $20 million or more. Brandon Cooks is somehow still making $19.8 million per year. Dude's done a great job making money in the NFL.
Shout out to his agent.
But I think definitely 20 is probably the low end based on that. Because a lot of those deals that are 20 are deals that were signed earlier, and those things go up.
The interesting comp there is, like, Terry McLaurin is a very different style of player. He's more your, like, lower volume, big play type guy. Little lower volume. He still gets a lot, but, like, he's only once had 80 catches, but, like, the yards and the touchdowns end up being the same. But he's to me is a very similar comp, because it's like, they've basically played the same number of years, one more for Terry, and they both have a different quarterback every year, and they're the one guy in that offense where that doesn't really matter. And so they've kind of – those teams, based on what they've managed in their passing game around them, sort of painting themselves in a corner where they're like, you're the one guy who's adjusted every single curveball we've thrown your way. And Terry McLaurin got rewarded for that. I think you said $22 million, but that was like – the way these work is
22.8, so basically 23 million per year.
And that was a couple years ago. So the deals build on top of each other. And that's why I've been kind of thinking it starts at 23, which is right around that Terry McLaurin, DK Metcalf range, and could get up to 25 or so. I mean, the one thing that you could say is, like, the one thing I think even Pittman would have to agree on is he's not Tyreek Hill, because nobody is. So it's, you should be able to drop down from that top spot. And I think you could probably fairly say he's not Davante Adams. But as far as what the market at this timing of the deal can pay, beyond those, after those two, like, that's kind of the range I think that you can at least think about.
Yeah, Diggs, Metcalf, Samuel coming in above McLaurin in the 24, basically in the $24 million a year range. So, I mean, maybe they can, I guess it depends on how he's viewed, but, I think in terms of some of these guys who are further down, you know, Amari Cooper's deal, Mike Williams' deal,
Amari Cooper's another good comp. He's older
than Pittman. Chris Godwin's deal. Like those deals at $20 million a year are – it'd be hard to I just don't think Michael Pittman's agent would would tolerate a discussion that starts with him being well below them.
No, and Pittman won't either.
I think you could make a pretty strong case that in terms of getting into the – you could make a case that he hasn't necessarily gotten to the levels of like a Debo or a DK or a Stephon. But that is a more of an argument that is eye test based, and that is not how contracts work. Contracts work based on numbers and comps. And so that's the other piece of this is it's going to be based on numbers and comps more than it is whatever. I think for the most part more than like, you know, the fans, the people out there who say like Pittman's not as good as these guys. Just in my experience, that's not how contracts work. It's about comps more than anything.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it works when it's like he's clearly not as good as like Tyreek Hill, but to your point, the comp too, Tyreek's production is through the absolute roof. That's why I think like when we were talking about Jonathan Taylor's deal, like what that would eventually look like, we always brought up Nick Chubb because that comp seemed so similar in terms of their age, like the production they had, the skills they have, the fact that they're like dominant rushers, but maybe not dominant on third down, and his deal. And then you sort of add a little bit of an increase because
of percentage of the cap, because the cap is going, up. So the deal as a percentage of the cap is the way the agent looks at it. That's kind of why I said some of those other deals that were signed before don't necessarily like the exact number doesn't apply because the cap is going up.
Yeah, and the markets do change sometimes. That was the argument that was sort of the leverage point against Taylor and Saquon is like, well, the deal that Nick Chubb signed or Christian McCaffrey signed, like that's not how teams are paying anymore. That was sort of the disagreement was, you know, then Taylor's camp came back and said, well, they should. The wide receiver market was the opposite side is that some of those you mentioned, like Amari Cooper and whatnot, like those are archaic deals compared to what has happened to that position in the last few years. So you have to look more at like what the recent deals at that position. And that's where like Terry McLaurin to me is similar to the Nick Chubb thing with Jonathan Taylor is that Terry McLaurin's production, everything about him is very similar to Pittman. So you just add that little increase about the cap going up. I think that's what I would try if I'm the Colts. I don't know, you know, we don't know what Pittman would end up ultimately doing, but it at least gets you into, I think, a pretty reasonable range of somewhere over $23 million. 4 years, stuff like that.
I think you can also probably get a short-term deal here or a shorter-term deal here because how old is Michael Pittman Jr.?
He just turned 26.
Like if you give him a – whereas I think other players are looking for a longer-term deal that people don't like with understandable reason. Usually when the longer the deal gets, if it's not a quarterback, the worse it ends up being. But like he could cash in again.
Mm-hmm.
If you give him a three, I think three is probably too small, but if it's a 4 year deal, he can cash in again, realistically. As long as he stays healthy and his play stays there.
So think about like Mike Evans is 30, I think, right now. So he's like he's in that spot where he's just finished a pretty big deal and he's going to hit free agency. And of course he's an older player. So like that type of value is not the same, but the market's also, the cap's gone up so much. The positional value's gone up so much to where it does make, like you can still sign a really, really nice deal at 30 if you are able to stay healthy, keep productive the way Evans has. And Mike Evans has always been kind of I know he's a player that Pittman has modeled himself after. They met after the game they played this year. That's sort of like the career trajectory for him to take too, is to follow something like that.
This pod is going to end up being a Michael Pittman pod, but I don't think that's the worst thing in the world given how quiet the off season generally is.
Yeah.
Or at least the way it looks from a football standpoint.
There is one thing I wanted to say on that, though, is just one piece of criticism I've seen out there a little bit from fans with this is that the Colts should have signed Michael Pittman Jr. before the season, so they're costing themselves because, you know, the season he had is going to make his price go up. That was all by design. Like Michael Pittman Jr.
By
did
Pittman's
not.
Design is what yes. you mean. Yeah.
Pittman did not want. He said they shut off all contract talks till after the season. That wasn't because they were going poorly. It's because they never really started. He wanted to have this year. And part of it was he wanted to try it with Anthony Richardson and see what, you know, you finally have that kind of younger up high upside quarterback and can create a bond with him and see where that goes. He still ended up having his best season statistically because I think he's just developed. He's a little bit more dialed in and focused on practice. His game day routine has changed. I've written about some of that stuff, but he's been building toward this. He wanted to get, you know, he knows the position he plays and he would love to get into free agency where there is this bidding war that, that moves that number up. So yeah, from the Colts perspective, that it would have been great for them to sign him early, but you, last I checked, I don't think you're able to just sign somebody who doesn't want to sign. So
right.
That's why they didn't.
Well, and this is where the wide receiver market and everything that we've talked about comes into play is why? Why would you sign the ahead of time deal unless the Colts really blew you away with the offer? Because it's we talked about this all through the season about the difference between you and I did. I don't remember if we did on the podcast or not. If we didn't, then you wanted to hear it. I apologize. But the biggest difference between Pittman and Taylor and their two contract situations is the position
mm-hmm.
and where the contracts were going. And Taylor needed to get his money as soon as he could because he could see where he could see which way the running back market was trending. Pittman can also see which way the wide receiver market has been trending, and he knows it's only going up. So in terms of betting on himself, like the risk of betting on himself was not really that low. If it was not really that high, because if he gets hurt this season instead of having the season he did, if he'd gotten hurt, there is still good money out there for him in the free agent market. Would it be the $20 million or whatever? No, but he would have had a chance to go like, you know, 1 year for a lot of money and rebuild it and then just cash in the next year. Like the risk in terms of him losing it was basically just career ending injury or nothing.
Yeah. And that's what's so different too, is that injury risk in the sort of wear and tear of the position. And so Taylor, you know, think about that. He was coming off of that ankle issue that hobbled him the whole prior season. He saw how hard it was to go replicate that year he had, and he had already had his best year too, that rushing title season. But it's like we saw this season, he came back, he had the thumb issue. You know, there's so much risk at the running back position that can not only tank your value and abilities, but like even if like it felt like a no-win position situation for the running backs, where even if he had that healthy full, you know, 250 carry season. Then what the league says is, well, you've added tread to the tires. Like, you're slowing down. That, like, no one says that at wide receiver. No one says, oh, Pittman caught 99 passes, so he's, you know, he's really slowing down here. Like, you basically get to benefit from your production as a wide receiver, pretty much every position outside of running back, you get kind of punished for it. And so, yeah, it's not like there's no risk if he, you know, tears an ACL in, you know, the last game of the season, or, you know, an Achilles or something. Like, there could always be some kind of thing that goes wrong. But the other thing, too, is that Pittman, you know, running backs have to rely a lot on the system around them, too. Wide receivers do to a point, but Pittman had already proven coming into this year that he could produce 1,000-yard seasons with, I mean, he almost did it last year, 2022, with three different pretty broken quarterbacks rotating in and out. So like even something as bad as what happened with, which is Anthony Richardson going down, that didn't like mess up his route of having a really, really good season. Could have been better, maybe, probably, if that hadn't happened. But he knew he was in a great spot to bet on himself, both for durability, for production, and for the market. And it certainly now looks like a smart decision.
Yeah, and I actually think it would have had to be worse than something like an ACL or an Achilles.
Probably.
Because, like, if you look at, like, Michael Gallup, he got
he got paid even after tearing an ACL, you know. And has not been as nearly as productive as Pittman. So I think the risk was really, like, we're talking about a, you know, a neck or a spine or something like that, where it's a true career ending injury. I think that's the only thing that could have really, really hurt his market, honestly.
Yeah, unless he messes it up on his own. But that's like, that's another reason why it's like he's a good player to sign, is that there's just no concern with him. Like, he's a dude that goes and hunts in his free time and spends time with his baby son and daughter. Like, there's no off the field sort of, the only kind of qualm you could have about him on a personal level would be stuff about, you know, what he said about targets. And to be honest with you, that's pretty much every receiver on that list that we read off, I think, either has done that, would do that, has thought about doing that, or forced to trade elsewhere because of what was going on. Like, that's just kind of the nature of the position. It's kind of what it takes to achieve at that high level, is receivers really want the ball. I mean, like, the top, it's sort of an alpha dog position. And so that's what you want, and that's kind of, I think, what you should want. It's what Chris Ballard has said he ultimately is very okay with, and that's kind of what they have.
Gallup got 5 years and $57.5 million coming off of a torn ACL. And his previous best season before that was 66 catches for 1,107 yards and 6 touchdowns. His other seasons before he signed that deal were 33 catches, 59 catches, 35 catches. So even if Pittman had suffered a torn ACL or a torn Achilles, I think he might have gotten a lot of money, no matter what.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? I'm kind of fine with this just being the Michael Pittman Jr. podcast.
Yeah. We got to find ways to do this.
Well, it's not even that. We've talked for a long time now. If we get into another thing, this is going to be a two-hour podcast, and people are going to be like, well, I have to wait for the next big drive I have in terms of doing it.
Plus, I think, like, we'll get to the other – they've got a lot of free agents you could talk through. He's not only the biggest one in terms of the cost and the name, but, like, this is kind of the whole – situation they're in, is how do they take the next step as an offense after some very encouraging signs from Shane Steichen and his scheme and his mastery of the offense, from some encouraging signs in a small sample from Anthony Richardson, and, like, there's just all these, like, little flashes we saw this season of Anthony Richardson, Jonathan Taylor. Like, they couldn't match up, they couldn't, you know, they both missed time. You know, there's a lot of what ifs that are exciting. You know, how do they build Jelani Woods if you can get him back on the field? How does Alec Pierce fit with Anthony Richardson? How does, you know, but, like, Pittman's like that, a very important part of that connective tissue, I think, is that you have this guy that, with all that stuff going on, a big reason why they finished like 11th in scoring is that the one guy who he missed a game and a half, but in the one game he missed entirely, was arguably their worst game of the season on offense against the Falcons. He's sort of this guy that's like he's such a building block to the rest of this stuff. And so it's kind of, to me, it's a little hard to talk too much more about that other stuff if we don't address the idea of, like, getting Pittman here and under contract and playing for this team. Like, this entire project looks completely different if they were to, like, let Michael Pittman walk, or which I don't think is happening, but that's kind of why it's like it's the big item out there, and it'll also set kind of, once they get that deal done, that'll kind of tell you what money they have left to go after other free agents, their own, elsewhere, just how aggressive they want to be. To be honest with you, one other just slight little side thing with Pittman, I think the only route you should have to not maybe signing him would be if you found something better. Which is very hard to imagine, but it would be like, if you're Chris Ballard and you're saying we just don't think he's worth whatever, $26 million, and that's what his line is in the sand, then I think you need to have a plan. You need to be that team. Like, if your argument is he's not AJ Brown, well, go get AJ Brown then, because, like, those don't just, they're not on your roster. You're not going to pick a guy at where they're drafting. What pick do they have again?
15.
Pick
number 15.
It's a good pick, actually. It's one of their higher ones. But still, at 15, you're not getting Marvin Harrison Jr. That was kind of the one possible argument is if they had the pick for Michael Pitt, or for Marvin Harrison Jr., just how electric he is and how and what that could be. That could be like you have to have an alternative if you're not going to do this. And I don't see it in the draft. I don't see it on the roster. I don't. I guess maybe if T. Higgins hits free agency, you could argue they're the same thing. But even that, and this Ballard knows this incredibly well, is that like even if they decide, like if you're going to go after like a T. Higgins, he better be like a significant upgrade. Not the same thing, like a significant upgrade. Because what you're doing is you're not rewarding the guy who did it for four seasons here that everyone saw like split his body in half against the Steelers to lay out for a pass. If you're not going to reward that guy and reward someone else that they don't know and that they haven't seen, that's just getting a little risky. Like you need to, if you're going to do that, you better be getting the clear upgrade. So to me, if they're going to move off Michael Pittman Jr., if that's even a thought, I don't know. You better be looking at like an AJ Brown or something like that. Cause I don't see with a rookie quarterback and the need to get this whole thing moving to Shane. I think it'd be kind of malpractice to just like let him walk and not have that alternative.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think that's a good way to put it. Is if you're not going to have Michael Pittman, what's your counter? Like what's going to be the other option? And you have to have a good one, a really good one, because there's questions about, you know, I know Ballard was sort of optimistic about Pierce in terms of the stuff he does well in going deep down the field. That's not what Pittman does. Downs operates out of the slot. That's not what Pittman does.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have anybody else on the roster who fits that at all. It would be a draft pick, rookie wide receiver production, kind of hard to count on. Yeah, no, you have to go get somebody.
It would be
AJ Brown or T. Higgins, probably the two most available at least at this stage.
Like I said, the one that
I don't know that either of those guys are cheaper.
That's the thing. The one thing I've thought about, like T. Higgins is the one that is, I think, is going to be in free agency. I don't see the Bengals even tagging him, just the spot they're in. They were in the same draft class, and it's possible that, you know, T. Higgins would just a little bit before Pittman, before the Colts were able to pick. So it's possible that they liked him better. Maybe they look at the two of them and think T. Higgins is a little better. Like I said, though, I think he's got to be like a good step better because he's not going to be cheaper. And so if you're going to make that swap and you're going to move off the guy that has kind of set the tone for the receiver room and a lot of the offense that teammates love so much and go for somebody they don't know, like he needs to step in and be like, okay, that's why they did that. Like, oh my gosh, this is like Davante Adams now. And if that's what he is, like it's just a real gamble to do that because some teams have gotten themselves in trouble doing that and it doesn't work out. The Bengals for many years before they got Joe Burrow, what they love to do that. Even when they got Joe Burrow.
Well, you have to know 100% we're getting the guy to replace him.
And like, here's an example is that the Bengals have done this for a long time. They usually mess it up. But they finally got it right, though, when they let Carl Lawson walk because they wanted to sign Trey Hendrickson. And that was a deal where it was like, okay, well, he better be an upgrade. And he was. And like that worked out. But it's like you got to know that. You got to hit on that because otherwise, like the Jaguars – teams like the Jaguars, Raiders, Bengals, teams that were bad for long stretches that make all these headlines signing free agents. It's the type of stuff that Ballard has said he doesn't like. You're getting someone out that another team has moved off of. You're bringing them into your building. You don't really know how they're going to operate. You're going to give them a lot of money. You're trying to guess on all this and then see how that like plays out in your locker room. Like those guys have to come in and really perform. And I just think they'll have a lot more trust in Pittman to deliver on, you know, a new deal and in this offense than someone that they've never had in their building.
Ballard always talks about the locker room, but I think the more important thing is how do those guys play on the field? Because like just using the Jacksonville example, they have spent so much money on defense over the last three seasons, well, the last three off seasons, and they are still garbage.
Yeah,
like I don't care if those guys are good in the locker room or not. I just don't. They didn't make the playoffs this year, and I know Jaguars fans are really upset about the offense, but their defense was terrible. And like to me, that's the other big thing is if you're going to sign somebody to the big contract, you have to know they're going to perform, because otherwise you end up where the Jaguars are, which is we spent all this money on nothing, essentially. Yeah.
And so I think the argument for Pittman is like, like the people who are not as big of fans of signing him, you know, it's the stuff talking about like what's his ceiling? Is he a top level player? That's fair. There's some projection there. Let's say he's not though. If he's what he's been, a 1,000 to 1,100 yard type wide receiver who catches 100 passes and plays just about every game, like that's pretty valuable. I mean, that can be worth close to the contract, even a very, very high contract. If they give him $23 million, you can nitpick a tiny bit, but it's not anything that's like, you know, they lost out on this and they could have filled it a different way. Like, the floor is just so high for him. So then you entertain like how much ceiling is there? Where can this go once he's playing with Anthony Richardson? They build that chemistry. They take some of those shots on, you know, scramble plays. They design more. He's like Pittman. The thing too is Pittman is entering. This is like a very interesting time. Football kind of moves this off a little bit sometimes based on the position, but wide receiver, like he's entering this very nice prime where there are guys that had like good starts to their career that like really took off once they hit that athletic prime age, like 25 to 28. I think Devontae Adams, Tyreek Hill, guys like that. Like Tyreek Hill was always like really, really good, but he's like just totally ascended because they get to a point where like everything just aligns, where they hit their peak physical capabilities. They start to really learn the game. They you know, learn the coverages, learn the opponents, learn the quarterbacks, and then they also really get dialed in and focused as individuals and professionals. And like fatherhood, I think, does that for some guys, and that structure and that security with the deal. And that's where I think there's more to unlock with Pittman. I think this year was actually the start of that. I think he showed some very nice strides in terms of not reacting as much as he had in the past to changes and things that were going wrong. There's a little of that, but I mean it was kind of radioactive the year before. I've written some stories on how he's worked through that. It's kind of the way he practices, the way he studies film. Like he's started to make some of those shifts and changes, and I think the next few years he can do more of that.
Since I'm a father and you're not, does that mean that I'm in a better spot?
Yes, you're in the prime of professionally your life. I'm less mature. So
you're that's more very true. What you're saying is you're more likely, you're a bigger risk.
Yes, I would say you're more dialed in, and I have more fun. One of us lives in the city. One of us lives in the suburbs.
I don't even know what that means. But yeah, you know, just
well, I guess what I'm saying is I you've hit your peak. Like I can still get a lot better. So that's my spin.
Okay. So in general, until Nate has kids, you're not getting the best of Nate.
That's true.
That's what we've learned here today.
This is my floor. So.
Oh man, I think that might be the time to end the podcast if we're getting to that point. I just had to point it out. I had to point out the joke there. It does. I will say it does come up sometimes when we have like scheduling things at the office. Is that I have kid stuff and Nate doesn't. And I mean that seems like maybe it'd be unfair. Except that, you know, Nate could change that if he wanted to. He just has to.
That's true.
Get some kids.
I think the part where it actually plays in the most.
Plus then, if you're a father, you're less of a financial risk.
Great. Actually, I feel like we see it most when we travel, because I always take the first flight out, and Joel takes the last one, and that's called someone who wants to go to a city and have some fun, and someone who's got kid stuff on Saturdays. So we are in different spots. That's what makes Cover 2 so good, right? So you're I'm trying to remember what I bring the heat. I'm the one blitzing, and you're the ones just kind of hanging back and taking away the deep reads. That's sort of, I feel like we've fleshed this out pretty well.
Yes. So your big takeaway from all of this talk about Michael Pittman Jr. is that Nate is irresponsible because he doesn't have kids.
And Joel's hit his peak.
And I didn't say that. You did.
That's true.
I'm just, you know, bringing the conversation full circle. That's what I'm doing.
All right. Well, how does it feel to have peaked in life?
I'm fine with where I am. I have zero issues. I have zero issues. I do plenty of things that make me happy.
Yeah.
I'm also much older than Nate, so as he likes to remind me. According to Nate, I am 57 and he's 22. Those are not our actual ages. But that's the way Nate talks about it.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess I'll be 22 forever.
In football terms, Nate's got me as like Larry Fitzgerald. Like he'd like to see me retire at this point. And he's barely finishing his rookie deal.
That's true. So
Well,
yeah, I didn't expect that podcast to turn that way, but I didn't also think we would do an hour on Michael Pittman. So
no, this is we did not plan that. It worked out though.
This is just sort of rolled, but yeah, the podcast we tried to record last week that went out like in the middle of it. I think this turned out a lot better that we had to wait because that was not a Michael Pittman podcast. And it was not as good as this one. So, hey, sometimes it works out.
This has been your Michael Pittman Jr. Edition of the Colts Cover 2 podcast. It has also been your Musings on Fatherhood and Age edition of the Colts Cover 2 podcast. I am Joel A. Erickson. This is Nate Atkins. If you don't have kids out there, I promise Nate didn't mean to insult you.
Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.